O Bharata, dost thou employ superior, indifferent, and low men after examining them well in offices they deserve? Means your, what do you call it? Superior would mean good qualities, good background, you know, the stable and all that kind of thing. Can't be corrupted. Indifferent will be, you know, that they will work nicely, but they're not necessarily specifically connected to you. And then low would mean that the character's not good, character's weak, all those kinds of things. So, but he says, but you're employing all of them because they all have a position. Like spies and that generally are always low-grade people. They're always low-grade because a low-grade person can go anywhere, right? It means they don't go into normal places, but the normal places aren't where you're spying, right? You're always spying in places that are out of the way. So then the low-grade people, they spy, right? It's just like if you're sitting in some place, you know, in the city and there's all these low-grade people, you know, moving around and carrying things and rickshaw wallahs and all that kind of stuff. You don't notice it at all, but if a gentleman was there, you'd notice them, right? Does that make sense? So they can't do the spying in that way. It means they would have to do in another thing, but generally most is, you know, what's going on around, what people are saying, what's the mood. Does that make sense? Right? So that's like that. Like hunchbacks, they're always engaged as spies, right? Because the hunchback is staring at you, you're not going to think anything of it. You know, you think it's annoying, you know, but you're not going to think anything of it, you know, like that. But if a gentleman was there staring, why is he staring? What's his purpose? You know, because hunchbacks stare at everyone. Everyone stares at them, they stare back. So does that make sense? So it's like, depending upon what is their position, so your ministers are superior, your main officers are superior, then once you get down, your bureaucrats can be indifferent because who they're managed by are superior persons. And then, you know, spies and other persons like that, then they're your low-grade, you know, persons. And so everybody has their place. Everyone has their job. O monarch, employest thou in thy business persons that are thievish or open to temptation or hostile or minors? So in other words, these are the qualities to avoid. If they're hostile towards you, they're not to be engaged in your administration. If they're thieves or open to temptation, they shouldn't be there, because always in administration you're dealing with a lot of wealth, a lot of power. So then they'll just harass people, right? So you don't. The king has to always see that bribes aren't happening, this and that. Or minors means they're not. They're not. They should be studying. They will not have the experience necessary. People will notice them because they're young, like this. Persecutest thou thy kingdom by the help of thievish or covetous men or minors or women? So it says, are your people in your kingdom being persecuted because they're being managed by people that shouldn't be managing, right? Like that. And so then he gives that here. So as we mentioned before, the thievish or covetous men, the ones that are already known as thieves, so they are going to steal, those are open to temptation. When they see how much money others have and this and that, then they'll tend to always want to get something, right? They're supposed to do a job. They're already being paid for, but they want more because you have money. Like that. Minors, they won't have the experience and all that. And they may not, they won't have the experience. Experience specifically means in the way of the maturity to understand what should be done in what situation and all that. Right? Or they won't be experienced enough, so therefore they won't do the work. Then women, then they have their position, but if they're performing the duties that the men would be in, they're going to view it from the perspective of a woman. So then they're going to add on to the administration the way they would deal with it in their life. And that may not work so well, you know, for just regular day-to-day working like that, because the emotional element will just be involved rather than just part of the administrative machineries. Right, so then one day it works nice, one day they're having a bad hair day, so they don't want to do anything in the office, but people just have to be able to go every day, get what they need done with no difficulties, right, like that. Are the agriculturalists in thy kingdom contented? So if they're contented, means everything's going well, they're protected. The weather is working nicely, everything works fine, because all your wealth is, I mean, a majority of your wealth is coming from the agriculturalists. So if they're happy, it means then you have enough wealth for the kingdom. Are large tanks and lakes constructed all over thy kingdom at proper distances, without agriculture being in thy realm completely dependent on the showers of heaven? Okay, so in other words, all the places... means they're not all just in one place, but they're all over, they're in all different districts and areas where all the agriculture is going on, people are traveling, that so that if there is ever is a problem with the rain, then they can get water from the lakes, right? So that way it's there, because you never, you're doing everything properly, but then somebody does something funny, you know, it's like Ramachandra, he's managing perfectly, but then he had that one Shudra then decided he was going to become very austere and take up the occupation of a Brahmin, and so it threw everything off. Nothing was working properly, so he had to go out and find him and then correct the situation. So there are things that sometimes happen that are not planned. You know, so then you should have some kind of backup, some kind of reserve like that. So then water tanks all over the kingdom, you know, at appropriate places, then is important. Are the agriculturalists in thy kingdom wanting in either seed or food? In other words, if they're wanting in seed or food, means you took too much tax, right? Or things aren't going well, and so therefore things aren't growing. Because if you've grown enough, then you keep seed in stock. You have how much you need, and you have seed in stock. But if things are less, you start to eat the seed. You know, because seed is, you know, your grains. You know, you're growing rice. The rice itself is the seed. Does that make sense? So you have to see if they're having a problem, that means then there's not enough being produced, right? So then why is that that's being produced? Is it due to thievery? Is it due to impiety in the kingdom? So the weather is not working properly. You know, is the taxes is too great? You know, what is the reason? So that they have to check. You know, is there famines? Is there droughts? Is there grantest thou with kindness loans of seed grains unto the tillers, taking only a fourth in excess of every measure by the hundred? So in other words, are you giving loans to them if they need, because the king always has huge granaries. So if they are short grains, are you giving them the seed so they can grow? And then from the profit, you know, above that, are you taking only a quarter? Right? In other words, above the seed, the initial investment. So if you have land, you put 10 bags of grain into the land, then after harvesting, those 10 bags are taken off. You don't count that as, okay, we grew so many bags. You know, we grew 110 bags of grain, therefore we can take tax, you know, so therefore we can take 27 and a half bags of grain. No. The 10 bags is taken off, so the 100 bags, that's profit. That you can take 25%. Does that make sense? Very, very important. Many of our temples, no one does any business for or with them because of this point. Simply this one point is the administrators or managers can't understand that profit means after you have paid for all investments and all expenses. They just take it, okay, whatever's the turnover, right? You know, you put in, you know, 100 rupees investment, you made 200 rupees, you know, was how much was the turnover? So then they say, okay, then you have to give 50%, right? That's what Rupa Goswami says. So they take 100 rupees, but that was all the profit because you put in 100 rupees. So you didn't make anything. So now you have to do all the other expenditures, you have to live, this, that. So there's no money to do the next buying and next business. right? And so they don't work with the temple. The temple thinks, oh, they're not submissive. They're just, you know, money hungry and greedy. And, you know, the business persons, and they think temple doesn't have any idea what they're talking about in the way of management and the way of economics and this kind of things. And so it's a problem. Does that make sense? So one has to be able to judge very, very nicely what's there. Because 50%, that means that's a 50% tax. There's no such thing as a 50% tax. Right? There's a 25% tax, but that's on grains. Other things, then it's less. Generally, the turnover is less. Right? Does that make sense? So these things all have to be done, and with those who actually know economics and know business, taking advice from them, then you can deal with such things and try to work out policies between the temples and those who are doing business. Does that make sense? Yeah? O child, are the four professions of agricultural trade, cattle rearing, and lending at interest carried on by honest men? Right? Because if they're honest, then everything goes, because everybody else has to buy. So then the whole prosperity of your kingdom is important if they're honest. Remember one devotee who used to work with the, preach in the circle of all the Rajputs, all the kings in that of Rajasthan. And in one discussion he was saying that they were making a strong point that one of the main duties of the king is to see that the business class does not exploit the people and does not charge prices more, give quality less. He says it's a very, very big part of the administration is making sure that the business devices aren't cheating like that. You know? Because you're making the protection, you're protecting the people, the devices shouldn't take advantage of that like that. Upon these, O monarch, depends the happiness of thy people. Right? Because all means, in other words, you need facility, that takes money. All the money is made by the Vaishyas. No one else makes the money. Right? Or at least those who are engaged in economics, they make all the money. Right? If they're not happy, if they're not honest, then your whole kingdom doesn't prosper. Right? O king, do the five brave and wise men employed in the five offices of protecting the city, the citadel, the merchants, the agriculturalists, and punishing the criminals always benefit thy kingdom by working in union with one another? So in other words, all your administrators have to also work together. They have their different departments, but if they don't work together, it'll be a problem. That's always one of the biggest headaches when you're dealing with some kind of organized administration, is that the different departments, whether they cooperate. Otherwise, one thing, this is important, and then that one's, you know, does that make sense? You know, someone says, you know, we need land for the cows, and you're taking it, you know, but then you need land for the kids, you know, because they need facility also. But then, you know, then does that make sense? You know, each one, if they don't cooperate, it doesn't work. So then here is the city itself, all the people, that's managed right, because in there, that's where a lot of things are going on. You know, village is much more simple than the fort itself. If that's not protected, then how will the administration go on? So they'll have to work together. The merchants, who's in charge of that? Because the merchants, that's where all your tax comes. That's how you're going to maintain your fort, you know, your armies, everything like that. The agriculturalists, that's where your other tax is going to come. So basically between your agriculturalists, because agriculturalists always have cows. So those two go together. Then your merchants, they're always doing the trade in that. A few of them are doing money lending. So between those two, then all your revenue comes in, then the fort is protected, the city is maintained, that's where all your biggest amount of administration is going on, and criminals are being punished. If that's all working together, then it works nicely. Otherwise, then they're taking money, there's criminals in the economic field, then it will create problem for everybody else. Right? Does that make sense? So they all have to work nicely together. For the protection of thy city have the villages been made like towns, and the hamlets and outskirts of villages like villages. So in other words, are for the protection of the city, are they getting are they developing? Are the real little dinky places turning into nice villages? Are the villages becoming towns? You know, do they have the proper administration? Because if they're not prospering, how is the kingdom going to prosper? Right? It can't, because that's where basically all your of the fort, it's in the city, is going to come from. Right? So many people live, like say, in Hastinapur. Dwarka, then Maharaj Ugrasena, he himself had 10 trillion bodyguards. You know, in other words, that was the elite forces, was the 10 trillion bodyguards, right? That was his own personal, private, you know, the king's personal army. So there's a lot of people in the city, right? Generally, when we talk Varnashram, we talk Vedic culture, then we think about everybody in the village. Generally, even now, a majority, at least a few years back, it was 80% of India lives in the village. So that's okay. But the point is where it's the majority of everything, as far as administration and everything that has to be run, is happening in the city. Right? So there's a lot of city people. So that has to work also. So when you're dealing with the Vedic, right, before he always already said, are the villages going well, agriculture's going well, dairy farming's going well, all that. Is that all happening nicely? Is all the different things happening around? Now it's also, is the city going well? Because the city where the administration sits, that's where your army sits, that's where everything is all happening from. Right? Does that make sense? So when you deal with Varnashram, if you're not dealing with the city also, then it's not actually a complete package. Right? Because if you think about it, even within the society, most devotees are from the city. And even if they move out to the quote-unquote farm, if you check the lifestyle, then you should probably replace farm with the word suburb. Like that. You know? Because they'll live in the farm because it's peaceful, it's nice for the kids. That, then they're going to get in their car, drive to the city, and sell their hats and stickers. Right? They're not going to grow carrots, guaranteed. Right? I mean, I know one farm that had 100 or more devotees on it. There were 2 devotees farming. 2. Right? That's it. And the rest of them, they went for the pick in the city. Like that, you know? And the farmer, I don't know what they did. Maybe they grew something for the deities. I'm not sure what they did, you know? Ride around on horses standing on their head or, you know, stuff like that, you know, stuff. Like that. I say, sing Mangalartik, you know, like that. Are all these entirely under thy supervision and sway? So are all the towns and villages under your control? Because otherwise, you're sitting in the city, you think it's all going on nicely because that's where everything's happening, but the rest of your kingdom is being controlled by another king. Or they're just independent doing what they like. Right? Remember we were mentioning Chandragupta. So Chandragupta, then he actually controlled all the villages and towns of the whole kingdom of Nanda except the city, except the fort. Right? And so all he had to do was take the fort. He already had the rest of the kingdom. Right? So it's very important. Otherwise you think, it's out in the village, what does it matter? No, but it does matter. Like that, because that's where everything comes from. If they control your villages and towns, they actually will control you. Are thieves and robbers that sack, comma, thy town? What's sack? I think it's supposed to be on the other side. Okay, that sack thy town. That sack thy town pursued. So the robbers, they sack and the town pursues. Okay. By the police. Okay. Are the thieves and robbers that sack thy town pursued by the police over the even and uneven parts of thy kingdom? So, means that the thieves and robbers will come to the town because there's more to steal there. So are they then pursued everywhere? Not that when they leave the town, then, they're out in the village, what do we care? No, but are they pursued everywhere? Like that one story of the, what was his name? Mandukya Muni? Remember the one that got put on the stake? right? And then he cursed Yamaraj, and then Yamaraj came as Vidura. So there, they were pursuing out in the ashrams, which means in the forest. So the thieves were running away, and they were chasing them all the way out into the forest, like that. So that's what the police should do, is they should be finding them all and catching them all, not just, you know, as long as it's, you know, as long as they stay on that, you know, in that area of town, then they don't bother them, you know, it's like that. Consolest thou women, and are they protected in thy realm? In other words, if women are having difficulty, is that being taken care of? Are they protected? It means no one's going to bother them. Consolest means there's always going to be difficulties coming up. Are they creating a proper environment? Not, oh, you're the king, you don't get involved in these things. Right? It's like that. It means if he doesn't protect and console, no one else is going to. So the king has to be doing that. If he's doing it, the women feel protected, then everything works. Because you have to remember, basically 50% or more of your kingdom is women. And those women control all your men. So it's very good to be dealing with them properly. You don't deal with them properly, you do not have a kingdom. You cannot run your administration. It just won't work like that. So, I hopest thou placest not any confidence in them, nor divulgest any secret before any of them. Right? So in the administration, he says, I hope you're not... you know, anything that's very, remember before it was saying when you're making these plans, special plans, that they're not told to anybody. So then here he's making sure is that was, you know, the first would meant to ministers that are officers or other persons that aren't involved with it. Only those direct ministers and that are involved with the plan, they should know. Now in this instance, he's saying then the women of the palace and all that, they also should not know. Right, because the man may or may not, if he has some profit, maybe he'll tell others. He doesn't like you like that, he maybe doesn't tell. Ladies will just tell just because it just comes up in conversation. Right? It's something new, it's something special. Right? Means if you're talking with the other lady, the one that can come up with the newest news, the latest gossip, they're always the senior one in the group at that moment. So there's so many ways that you can get things out of them, right? You know, it's like Lord Shiva got into a lot of trouble. The same principle, right? His wife wanted to hear stories that no one else has heard. Because when at noontime when she would go down to the well and that to collect water, you know, and do all those kind of things, all the other ladies would go there at the same time. That's when they would talk and exchange their stories and news. He had to have something none of them knew. Right? She is, you know, Gauri, so she's got to be the senior lady. But, you know, others all have things to say. So then Shiva then told her stories that no one had ever heard of before. Unfortunately, at the time, three of the servants, the house servants, were in the room when they started the conversation. They understood it was private and they didn't want to come out, otherwise Gauri might get angry. So they hid underneath the asan where they were sitting. So they heard all the stories, the amazing stories. So then they went back home and they told their wives, wow, we heard these stories, because they didn't really understand what they were for. Then the next day, of course, then Gauri goes down to the well, you know, ready to tell all kinds of interesting stories. And then the other girls said, oh, did you hear about this? And then all those same stories they heard. So, you know, needless to say that after collecting the water, then Shiva was not, you know, in a good position. So she went back, chastised him, this, that. And then he figured out it was the servants, because, you know, who told? Then figured out they were under the bed. They got cursed. They came down to earth. Then, you know, those stories then became... were brought before, they were discussed amongst themselves. I think one of them knew all the stories. Oh no, I think they all knew the stories. But one of them went to the king and then said that, I have all these stories, would you like to publish this? And so he said, okay, well, what's, you know, a story? So he started, but the stories were all in Paisach, right? Because that's the group, right? You know, it's like you're in Gujarat, you speak Gujarati. So you're in Shiva Loka, you speak Paisach, right? You know, so the king was very proud because Sanskrit is in a higher position and he didn't want to have anything to do with Paisach, so he said, forget it. So then, sometime later, then the king went out to the forest, you know, hunting with all his, you know, his entourage and that. And he sent out the scouts to go find where is the most game in the forest. And they all came back and said, there's no game in the forest. Absolutely nothing. And then the king was, what do you mean? How can there be no game in the forest? No animals, no birds, no nothing. He says, they're all at one ashram, every last animal and bird in the whole forest. And he said, what are they doing? He said, they're all listening to stories. So then the king went there, and you know, they got called. You know, the stories is that there's a sadhu there, and he reads off of a leaf, a peepal leaf, the story, and all the animals are listening. And when he finishes it, he throws it into the fire. Then he takes the next one. So then the king comes, and then when the animals see the king, because, you know, he comes for hunting, then, you know, this is bad news. So then they all leave. And then the king goes to the sage and says, what are you doing? Why are you throwing these wonderful stories into the fire? And he says, no, nobody wants these stories. He says, nobody wants. Look at all the animals here. This is amazing. He says, no. He says, you know, nobody wants these stories like that. He says, how can you say that? He says, well, I came to you and said, do you want these stories? And you said, no, because they were in Paisach. You know, so then the king agreed to publish them, but 90% were burnt, so only 10% left. So that's called the Katacharit Sagara, the ocean of stories. In other words, it's pure, unalloyed, unadulterated, unedited Gandharva Prajalpa. Like that. This is Prajalpa of the heavenly planets. Like that. And, you know, it's amazing because, you know, how everyone likes to read Prajalpa. So we started going through them with the kids, reading them. After three stories, they couldn't handle it anymore. It's just like, you know, the depth of mundanity is like so deep. You know, modern stories don't have they don't go to that mundane depth that these do. You know, they're pretty superficial, but these are just like, and they're all true stories. That's the fun thing about them. Everyone is a true story, and they're just wild. Just wild. Like that. But I only know of one kid that got through the book. Everybody else was two, three stories, they had to put it down. They just, like, it's too mundane for them. Okay, so then the point is it goes back, is that, this is the point, is that, is anything really, really important like that, that's administrative, that deals with the outside, that's going to have influence by others on it, that is not spoken to the women until it is accomplished. Like that. You know, if it's something in the family, it's something that it's not, there's no influence outside the family, or, you know, like that, that's another thing. But this is talking about, you know, the management of the kingdom, that one shouldn't, they shouldn't be involved in. O monarch, having heard of any danger and having reflected on it also, liest thou in the inner apartments enjoying every agreeable object? So if you heard about a danger, are you just, after contemplating and seeing its danger, are you just staying in the inner apartments with the family and just enjoying yourself instead of going out and correcting the situation, going, hey, now why does it have to always happen at this time? Right? Does that make sense? So it has to be taken care of like that. You know, it's like Arjuna, you know, that story with Arjuna, that's exactly the point here, is that, you know, it was their time, you know, Yudhishthira's a Draupadi, so that means it has to be at a time when that would happen. The king wouldn't be with the family except that, you know, from the, you know, basically from noon to 4 o'clock or in the evening, like after 7 o'clock, right? It means other times are for the kingdom. So if he was with Draupadi, that means it had to be one of those times. Right, and by the sounds of it, it would have been the daytime because, you know, you could see the dacoits from a distance. So if it was night, it would be hard to do that. So then he came at that time and approached Arjuna and said, you know, my cows have been stolen. Right? So then he's supposed to do something about it at that moment. Not go, okay, yeah, in the afternoon, or yes, come tomorrow, you know, we'll bring it up at court, see what the ministers have to say, you know, talk to the committee and see, you know, get a vote and say, you know, what like, you know what I'm saying? So immediately he did something about it. This gives confidence, right? This gives confidence. Having slept during the second and third divisions of the night, thinkest thou of religion and profit in the fourth division wakefully? Right. In other words, you have the four divisions of the night. So the first division of the night, that is for the family and entertainment and, you know, that kind of, you know, just socializing. Then the second and third, that's for when you should be sleeping. Right? And then the fourth, that's when you should be getting up in the morning. Right? It means you take the sunrise to sunset, you know, sunset to sunrise, divide that into four parts. Right? So if you're taking it, the sun sets at 6, rises at 6, that means from 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock you're sleeping, from 3 o'clock you're up, right? And so that's the, does that make sense? Like that. So then that's how it works. So it moves according to the timing, like that. So in winter then it's dark longer, so there's more rest and all that. In the summer it's dark shorter, there's less rest, but you don't need more rest in the summer, you need more in the winter. So it works out very nicely. So in other words, the kings are up in the Brahma Muhurta, they're involved in their religious practices, their sadhana, they're giving in charity to the Brahmins, they're performing their yajnas, all these things. O son of Pandu, arising from bed at the proper time and dressing thyself well, showest that thou thyself to thy people, accompanied by ministers and conversant with the auspiciousness or otherwise of moments. Right? So, in other words, having gotten up in that part of the night, once it's daytime, then are you in your court? The people can come see you. Are you being seen by the people? Right? With your ministers and all that. So is it all... Is everything happening? Or are you just staying in the house and everything like that? Does that make sense? So it means if you're an administrator, people have to see you. You're moving around, you're doing things, you come to their places, then it starts to work. If you're always just in your office, everyone has to visit you, it does not give confidence in administration. Like that. Does that make sense? Right? Remember before he said, do they feel comfortable to approach you? Right? They have to feel comfortable that they can approach. So there has to be a time. This is the time. You want to approach? This is the time. Right. Question? No. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And those ministers are, you know, as qualified as we mentioned before. They know their topic, and they know auspicious and inauspicious, how to apply it, time, place, and circumstance. So that kind of group, you're seen with them, that gives confidence. Right. Oh, a repressor of all foes, do men dressed in red, armed with swords, and adorned with ornaments, stand by thy side to protect thy person? Right. In other words, so they are you always guarded properly? You know, do you have your bodyguards with you? Are they qualified, or are they always there? Right. Oh, monarch, behavest thou like the God of justice himself unto those that deserve punishment, and those that deserve worship unto those that are dear to thee, and those that thou likest not. Okay, so in other words, are you just like Yamaraj in dealing with everybody? Those that deserve punishment, those that deserve respect, then, what was he saying? Those that are dear and those that doesn't like. In other words, are you equal that you're giving punishment properly to anyone who deserves punishment? Does that make sense? Of course, according to the station what one is, the person is, the punishment varies. Like that, no matter who it is. Like that. But still, in other words, they're being dealt with properly according to the law. Like that. Does that make sense? But applying the law, it does apply to the person. Does that make sense? You know, you have a law that applies, you have a criminal did something wrong, you had a Brahmin that somehow or another by accident did something wrong. They both have to be dealt with, but there'll be a difference in how it's applied. Does that make sense? Yeah. You always have, if you apply this, the rule the same, oh, it's the rule, Prabhu, we just follow the rule, you will fail. And you see, any administration that does that fails. It does not have the confidence of the people, because it means it can't apply the rules to the people. Time, place, circumstance means the people. If you can't apply it like that, then it will have no meaning. They will understand, okay, you're managing, but you're not managing people, you're managing rules. They just happen to be applied on people. Does that make sense? Okay. O son of Prita, seekest thou to cure bodily diseases by medicines and fasts, and mental illnesses with the advice of the aged? Okay, so then are you taking, in other words, are you physically and emotionally properly taking care of everything? You know, you're taking care of, you know, your diet is proper, your medicines are proper, so physically you're in good shape, and emotionally and all that, are you getting advice from those, the elders, you know, those who have qualification? So therefore your mind is peaceful, you know what to do, you have the determination, the focus and all that. In other words, you have to take care of these things. You can't just say, oh, I'm too busy, right? It means emergency, yes, you'll be too busy, but on a regular day-to-day, then they should be taken care of, right? I hope that the physicians engaged in looking after thy health are well conversant with the eight kinds of treatment and are all attached and devoted to thee. That means they know all the different options for medicine, because they're all connected, how they work together and all that. They, in other words, they're very qualified in their field, so they can take care nicely, they're devoted to you, and so therefore they'll take care of you nicely. Because right? Otherwise then they won't take care, they won't necessarily give the right prescription, everything. So they have to be very, very qualified. Right? Happeneth it ever, O monarch, that from covetousness, folly or pride, thou failest to decide between the plaintiff and the defendant who have come to thee? So in other words, due to covetousness, folly or pride, are you not deciding your cases properly? Like that. Because if that ever comes up, then you have a problem. Because justice is very, very, very important. Like that. The king, he has to, you know, what it means that the king represents eight of the demigods. So one of them is Yamaraj. So he has to be very just and all that according to the rules. If he doesn't take care of the justice, then whoever did the wrong, the result falls on them. This is a little known thing of the liberalists, like that, you know, it's something to take note. Let us say somebody steals, the example is given of a thief. If a thief steals something and the king rightfully punishes him, you know, in other words, for what he's stolen, what the situation is, what his position is, what his mentality is, you know, and all that, then he gives the punishment exactly for that. Then 100% of the reaction of the thievery falls on the thief. And the thief is purified. So everybody benefits. Now, if the king lets that thief go, then the result of the thievery, only one quarter of it falls on the thief. Right? Then the rest of it falls on the king, on his ministers, and on the judges. Right, little known fact. So So anything that's wrongly judged, then if it's rightly judged, the reaction goes to who the reaction should go to. If it's wrongly judged, in other words, someone who's innocent, you punish. Someone who's punishable, you don't leave unpunished. Then the reaction comes to the king and his ministers. Yes.
Is that because the ignorance gets distributed?
The ignorance gets distributed? No, it's... Yeah, you could say it's ignorance, but, you know, it'll come by pride. Who is it? Pride. What did you say? Folly. So that's ignorance. So ignorance, pride, or covetousness. So they'll all stem from ignorance. But you say that, but the point is an action has been performed. An action always gives a reaction. So now, where does it go? It should go to the thief. But if you, when you get involved, then you judge it wrong, it comes to you. So therefore it said punishment is a very powerful thing. It's actually created by God. Like that. When the kings are created, punishment was created along with them to run the kingdom. Just like when cows are created, you know, when people are created, kings are created to maintain them. And then along with that, punishment is created so that the kings can properly run the kingdom. Right? Just like when cows are created, then vices are created to take care of them. Right? So that's why the king does the punishment, the vices take care of cows. Like that. So so if it's not done right, then it will destroy the kingdom. Like that. Especially if something's judged badly. You know, in other words, if he lets a thief go, then he'll get the reaction of that. But if an innocent person gets judged badly, then it can destroy the whole kingdom. So one will think, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, the rules are... But that's simply the ignorance of the liberalist. Because it's God's creation, any action will produce a reaction. So you're just saying the reaction didn't happen. Oh, the child, you know, broke the very expensive, I mean, dropped the very expensive vase. But we don't have to worry because they're a child, you know, and so it won't break. You know, gravity doesn't function, you know, when it comes to children. Does it work? No. So therefore, why should it work on the subtle? It won't work. So it's simply folly and pride and covetousness that these mentalities will be taken. Otherwise, how does, you know, right and wrong get overlooked? Because right and wrong is established by God. It means God is the source of religion, right? The Prabhupada makes that point. Only God can establish religion. So, and a religion establishes what is right and wrong. So therefore, to make up your own thing means you have to think you're God, or you don't have to follow God. You know, it's a very subtle thing. Put in those words, very blunt, then everyone will say, no, that's not what I mean. But it is. I'm just meaning where it should be a little practical. So that means God's impractical? Right? All that work Vyasadeva wrote down, spent, you know, his life writing down all this stuff, and it was impractical? God came as an incarnation of, you know, writing, literature, literary incarnation, and what he wrote was impractical? Right? Can't even make a movie out of it, right? You know, it's like that. You know, you ever seen a good Mahabharata movie? How impractical, right? You know, it doesn't work. You know, you can't make a movie out of it like that. You can't publish books and sell that. Okay, that's okay. So that, therefore, we keep the books around, right? Right? Books are around because somebody's making money off of them. Okay, so then it works. But does that make sense? So it's not well thought out, this platform. But in it, having said that, if it's not dealt with properly according to time, place, and circumstance for the individual, it's just applied as the rule like before, that also is wrong. That will also give a reaction. So in other words, for improperly applied rules, then liberalitarian will then not want that to happen, so then they swing the pendulum to the other side, which is also, you know what I'm saying? Which is worse, a criminal who gets let off without being punished, or an innocent person being punished? Right? They're equal. Like that. So that's the problem, is that both are wrong. So punishment means... That's why the king has to be very qualified so that he can punish properly. This whole thing of just everybody comes in and then has their idea for punishment and nobody's taking the responsibility. What they don't know is if they've made a wrong judgment, that whole committee gets the reaction. And depending upon what it is, that reaction will be handed on to their family and relatives and their realm of influence. They don't know that, and they'll say, but ignorance does not reduce the effect of it. In other words, they themselves, their families, and, you know, whatever is theirs, their businesses, their realm of administration will be destroyed. So punishment is not something that's just light and, oh, better safe than sorry. Better safe than sorry, because look at it. All those people say better safe than sorry. Where are they now? Are they still in those positions of administration? Do they still have the same authority? Think about it. They're not. Why? And what happened to their reputation? They always lose it. They always lose the position. They lose everything. As devotees, you know, of course, then the process is there, you purify. But you just look at it practically. It's just the way it is. So you can see that's the whole, that's the beauty of the Vedic science, is actually, if you look at it, you know, straight, it's observable. You can see it. Shabda can be seen as pratyaksha. That's perfect. But to take pratyaksha and then work only with that without shabda, that's useless. Because then you're dealing with your senses, it's at fault. But you start with shabda, and but you leave it as shabda, that's not very good. But at least it's shabda. But the person who takes shabda and turn it into pratyaksha, that's the one you're looking for. Right? That's the... What's the word? Shrotya? No. Not Shrotya. Can't remember. There's a specific word Manu uses. That means that that person who can take the rules and make them observable to you. Like that. You know, they can explain it, they can do it, that you can see it. That has a specific name. I can't remember the name. So that's what's important, because otherwise it's practical. You can just look at it and that's just the way it is. Like it or not, it's just right there in your face, because it's God's creation. It's going to go the way He says. Is that okay? So it's important. Punishment has to be there. It must be there. Otherwise, you know, Bhagavatam says that the sun rises and sets on time only out of fear of Krishna. Otherwise, you know, he might be off doing something else, you know. Like that. But everything, the wind blows, yes.
Maharaj, does the same thing apply between teachers and students?
Yes. But in there you're dealing with how you say? You're not as much dealing with the law as you're dealing with... So that's why always in teacher and student you're looking that the teacher knowing what they're going to teach, what they can teach, what their nature is, then looks for students that can take advantage of that. That's why you, in other words, you're more matching teacher to student. That's why in the Vedic concept you have many, many, many schools. You don't have one school that does all. You have many schools, because even if you have the same subject matter, the teacher themselves has their own particular perspective and their way of teaching, and that will be appreciated by a certain class of student. Right? In Dwarka alone, there was 128 million teachers. Right? And that meant generally they were running their own schools. And they were all teaching Vedic curriculum. Right? One is that there's only so many students you can work with, and the second is that, but you know, depending who you are, then generally the recommended, you know, one-on-one is 12. But someone like Vishishta or what's his name, Durvasa, they had 10,000 disciples because they were good at managing, right? No, it's Vishishta's, you know, his alter ego. What's his name? Vishvamitra, I think it is. I think he has Vishvamitra. Vishvamitra was the administrator. It was the emperor like that. And Vishishta is always the Rajguru for the kings of the Sun Dynasty. So you know they're good. They're good at administration. So for them to single-handedly manage 10,000, that's not a big deal for them. But Prabhupada mentions the point of that one good teacher could teach hundreds. of students, because he teaches the elder, they teach the younger. So that's always important, is the teachers are teaching the elder and giving them positions, you know, of responsibility in that, because they're supposed to then give that to the who's below them. Right? The teacher's also working with the kids, but that's part of the process, right? Does that make sense? That's why it's there. Because when you teach, you learn more. So part of the learning process is to teach. Therefore, anyone who knows something is supposed to be involved in some way of teaching it to someone else below them. Right? So if that's managed nicely, in that way, one person can manage hundreds. But in any case, the point is that the nature must be similar. In other words, a school has a flavor, has a mood, and it has something that is being taught, what benefits you'll get from it, what you can do with it. And those who like that, they join that school. Does that make sense? That's why in the Vedic thing, there is no such thing as competition between schools. Right? Raibya Muni has his ashram next to Bharadvaj. There's no competition. Right? In other words, it's who you like to work with, that's who you study under. Does that make sense? So there's not a competition. The modern, they make competition because other, you know, whatever, either the shortage of students, economic reasons, other, you know, how you say, tomfooleries or whatever. But there's no competition like that. You know, it's just, it isn't. Because God's unlimited, the perspectives you can view Him are unlimited. So therefore, there's no problem. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the principle applies, but it's much, the margin that you're dealing with is very narrow, because the natures are very similar, so it's just a matter of basically more of cultivating and stuff like that. So the main thing is seeing that the nature of the student matches the teacher in the school. It matches, it works. The student will get the benefit, will change, will develop. It doesn't match, then it's the law that the teacher should not keep that student. It's just after a trial period, whatever the trial period is, then you have to say, this won't work. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? That's yes?
What is one of the main qualities of the student in the generation? On a general point of view,
What's the main quality? Of course, there needs to be respect. I mean, that's always the first quality. So respect means, because without respect, knowledge can't be transferred. The ego will block the knowledge. Because knowing it is, memorizing it's one thing. So knowing it's one thing, but understanding it and being able to apply it is something completely different. Therefore, that respect is the first thing. Respect for the knowledge that they're giving is what you want. It's not what you want, then you won't apply yourself. Why be there? There's going to be a natural, there's going to be a lifestyle that goes with it. If you aren't interested in that lifestyle or can live that lifestyle, it won't work, right? You know, like modern education has a lifestyle that goes with it, you know, and depending upon the particular education, it has this life. You know, the musicians have their lifestyle. You don't like the lifestyle of a musician, why would you go to a music school? You know, like that. The lifestyle of a doctor, why would you go to a medical school, right? You know what I'm saying? So in the Vedic education, if you don't like the lifestyle of those persons that are running that particular institution, then you won't like the knowledge, because it won't fit. You know what I'm saying? It's different. So if because that's one of the rules, is the teacher has to be able to make the student like themselves. Right? In other words, he knows the scriptures, he studies the scriptures, he knows the scriptures, he practices the scriptures, and he teaches that same thing to his student. Does that make sense? So that you could say, is what we're talking on is the mood, is that the mood is right. Because the student is in the same, how you say, the occupation is the same as the Shudra, right? In other words, students, devotees, women, and Shudras have the same occupation, and that they're working for someone else's benefit. Does that make sense? So that means the mood of the teacher, the respect towards things that are connected to the teacher and other students and the facilities like that, the teacher themselves, like that. Does that make sense? All that has to be respected. That is, then it will work very wonderfully. You'll find one's life will change. If one doesn't, then it's a problem, because one personally will have one life, and then the school is another life. And that's why at least the Vedic system is that, you know, with us, if the parents and the student aren't fully agreeable, understand what is going on in the school, want to be part of that, then we don't entertain them as students, because it won't work. The student may be interested, parents not, right? Parents interested, students not. Then it won't work, because otherwise then the difference in lifestyle, it has to be that when the student learns something in the school, when they go home, if either the parent's already doing it or appreciates that that is being introduced into the home. But if they see it as a competition, that the school is, you know, having more influence on my child than I am, and therefore I'm losing my control, therefore I'm losing my security, therefore I'm losing all my relationships, therefore I'm going nuts, then that won't work. It won't work. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the student or the teacher. It just means they're not matched, you know? Like a fork and a bowl don't go together, right? A fork and a plate, bowl and a spoon. There's nothing wrong with the spoon. There's nothing wrong with the fork or the bowl or the plate. It's just they have the match. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's not that someone's less or something. No, it's just a matter of it's either the wrong nature or the wrong timing. Like that. Does that make sense? But by intelligence, one can generally adjust most anything if one has the determination. But that means then it's practice. And one has to be very intelligent and very conscious. So that's why consciousness is the main thing that's being taught in the education. Is that okay? Okay. Is that answer yours? Right. Okay. So, yes?
How to show that determination.
Main thing is to do it. Main thing is to do it. If you're... It depends. It depends on if you're three bricks up or three bricks down. Right? If you're three bricks down, just do it. Right? If you're three bricks up, just do it and mention how much you appreciate it. Okay? Does that make sense? Like that. Because that's just the way the natures work. Right, it has to be seen and heard. You know, down here in the pit here, then it just has to be seen. Hearing goes on. We hear a lot of these guys, but we're looking for something to happen. Right? Okay? Yeah?
Sometimes it's agreed with, so it's heard, but then it's hard to practice, so it's not seen.
Yeah, but one has to make the endeavor to make it visible. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just the way it is. You make it visible, it will work. Because the form matches the mood, right? Means if you have the mood, then even in not proper circumstances, you can still manifest. You can get the thing done even though you don't have the form. But if you're working to develop the mood, the form is the proper, you know, how you say, carrier of that mood. They just match nicely. So that's why in Vedic education it's a package. The education and the lifestyle go together. While in the modern, because of the secularness of it, they've, you know, because lifestyle comes from religion, and you separate religion from education, it's not a package, you know, like that. You know, you expected, you know, the priest will take care of that, or your family will take care, school just takes care of the education. But in the Vedic, the two are blended, because what you learn is what you should live. Like that. The two go together. Is that okay? So one at least has, I mean, in other words, if one's making a sincere endeavor, it can be seen that the endeavor is there, though there may be mistakes. But it can't be that there's a duality. You know, in other words, if there is any duality that's there due to habit, one shouldn't be comfortable with it. In other words, one shouldn't be comfortable or have difficulty in the school lifestyle and then outside the school be comfortable with that. It may be just, you know, you're used to it, but, you know, you're trying to get comfortable with this. It should be that what's in the school is what you're comfortable to live outside. And if you're comfortable with that, then it will work. It will work. You know, it's practical, it works. But it's just a matter of mainly using the intelligence to convince yourself of actually the benefits. You have to actually look at it. In other words, the sentiment has to be considered, but you have to look at actually what's the benefits. Then you know whether your sentiment is being properly applied. Right? You know, you just like these people like this. Okay, you like these people, but do you have to like them right now? Do you have to show that like now? Couldn't you be doing something else? And then once you're trained, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like you have your friends. You could be out partying with them all night. But you're not studying, so therefore you're not passing your exam. So for those that time you could be studying and doing right, then afterwards you got a whole lifetime you can go out and party with them. But if you party now, then you won't be partying later because you don't have any facility. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So one has to make that sincere effort. If the effort is being actually sincerely made, it is observable. You know what I'm saying? Like the child, the baby is walking, right? They bump into things, they fall over, but you take the sincerity of that endeavor. Does that make sense? You don't go, well, hey, you know, we couldn't enter him into the walking marathon, so, you know, forget it, kid, you know, like that. Is that okay? Yeah? No?
Sometimes, like, when you're talking and everything makes sense and, you know, you agree with everything, but then when you go home, then you do something different. Why is that?
Habit. It's only habit. Habits you can change by practice. Means, in other words, that's why intelligence is used, because the mind won't do something else. The intelligence will, it means you know I should do this, but you should know why. In other words, if you don't know why, find out. Why should I do this? You know? So let's say, okay, for example, okay, in the school we cover up nicely, we dress nicely and everything like that. But when we go out, we don't. But why are we covering? Just it's a school thing? No, it's the nature of women. You have something very valuable. Means if you think you're cheap, then you don't have to cover up. Because what's uncovered is cheap. Right? In other words, you go to Calcutta, you know, you go to any, you know, you go to the city, and the stuff that you can buy on the sidewalk that you can just see by walking, how expensive is it? Right? And anything that actually is very expensive, where do you have to go to buy it? Inside somewhere. And if it's really expensive, there's a guy at the door with a gun. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. If the girl feels she's cheap and is comfortable with that, then it doesn't matter. But what's being taught is a principle of self-dignity, of self-worth, of self-protection. Right? Because if a girl, she's not endeavoring to protect herself, no one else can. Because girls are more clever than boys. So a boy can only protect a girl if she wants to be protected. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, in that is that what people can't see, it has a mystique. And anything rare is more valuable. Right? Does that make sense? If, let's say, you have very expensive something, like a phone, okay, very expensive phone, but if everybody has it, is it important? You want one? No, you want it because it's different. So therefore, girls maintain their value by no one can tell actually what they look like. Because as soon as you can tell what they look like, then you can judge them, you can write them off. You know what I'm saying? So it seems much easier, but actually, emotionally, it's much more rough. right? Well, the tradition appears by practice to be more difficult, but the result it gives and the peacefulness and confidence it develops is much greater. Right? Because you know no one can see you. You know, they can't tell what you physically look like. Therefore, they can't judge you. And if they can't judge you, then you don't have to put up with all the, you know, all the stuff. You know, all the canine stuff. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, but it's just a matter of practice. Because once it's practiced, this actually is easier than the other one because you don't have to be in your face back. The other one, you have to be in your face to protect yourself. So it's actually more difficult. The other one is you can just relax. You can just be yourself because you don't have to prove anything to anybody because they don't have anything to work on to judge. Does that make sense? Like that. So that would be examples that therefore you have to know why you're there and then therefore apply it and make the practice. And if you do, then you'll start to see. Because only with practice you can get realization. Just to know is not good enough. You have to realize. Does that make sense? Right? You know, someone's trying to teach you something. I know. But that's not good enough. Okay, you know, but if you're not applying it, means you really don't know. Someone who's applying it, that means they know.
They won't say I know.
Yeah, they won't say I know. Because there may be some other aspect. Because knowledge is unlimitedly deep. So someone's teaching you something, even technically you may know, there's a perspective on it that you may not have known. You know how to cook, but someone can come up with a recipe you never heard of before. Or a cooking technique, or a way of spicing that you've never seen before. So therefore, even though you know cooking, you never know cooking. Anyone who's actually expert in the field, the more they know, the more they know they don't know. Right? The new kid thinks they know everything. But someone who's really actually in the ocean of knowledge knows how big the ocean is. Right? And he's like I remember talking to the top musicians in India. And you're talking about something, they just say, I only know this much. It's unlimited. But they're the top, they're the best, the most professional, you know, in the Indian music. So that's it. Is anybody who actually knows the subject knows how vast it is and never says, I know. Right? Someone who is beginning in it, they've dabbled in it. You know, that's the Utsamayi. You know, one of the anartas is that, you know, the kid goes to school first day, learns ABCs, and then he knows everything. Comes home, he's the big pundit, you know. Oh, mommy's pundit, yes. Is that okay? Yes. Yeah. Means you know what they're going to say, but it's worth hearing it again because the perspective and repetition is what actually creates something going in. That's why in the Shastras it's always repeated again. Like here, some of these instructions that we're going through have been repeated many, many times, right? But you see the perspective of it slightly different. Like the one before, don't say things, but you're talking about ministers and other officers that aren't involved. Then it's the same thing again, the principle, with one's family. Because there's always a difference. So the principle is that if you know but don't know how to practice, then ask that question. Okay, so this is here, this works like this, but then how to apply that? Or why should I apply it? Or what's the benefit of applying it? In other words, the more you know, the more you can convince the mind to accept it. Because there's reasons behind everything. The Vedic is not there to oppress people, it's there to actually free the people, to get them out of the material world. But you have to deal with what you have. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you work practically with what you got. So according to your conditioned nature, you work with that. But the thing is you have to actually know what your conditioned nature is. Right? Modern doesn't teach you what your nature is. Vedic does. So you don't actually know what you're dealing with. Like in the modern culture, men don't know what men are, women don't know what women are. They just don't know. So even though they're talking, you know, they don't know what they're talking about. Just it's unfortunate, it's sad. But you can't blame them, because where's the place to learn it? It's not there. It's not part of the modern way of life to actually know what's going on. Does that make sense? So if one knows but one can't, is having difficulty applying or doesn't know, then ask like that. And even once asked, then what is the point you get stuck on? Ask that. So the more practical, the more specific, then the more clear and more practical answer you can get. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. Okay, so we should end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Ram Padaki.